Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin. With guest co-host...
Mike W.
Okay, guest, do your thang. Not thing, thang.
Oh, really? Okay, I have to wake up.
really? I gotta do stuff?
Dan likes tagging him with the intro.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 248. My name is Mike W., and I'm your guest co-host for today. I hope you'll enjoy the show, and my stage fright doesn't overwhelm me and turns everything ha-ha into stuttering. Yeah! Anyway, as always, we have Dan Q.
Snowflakes keep landing on my face.
Makalua.
And after watching Mad June's XCOM video, Dan is not allowed to go outside when the aliens are around.
What makes you think I would want to?
The Mean Team.
My nations are fundamentally peaceful, I swear.
And Mad June.
Voted most likely to get the rest of the squad killed. Well,
yeah.
They couldn't make it.
It's only because I don't play the game.
Oh, no, you were in the game. You did well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you didn't shoot anything. Well, you didn't actually hit anything you shot at, but...
Read by Zengiz. New great people. Great politician bureaucrat and great sportist, great curator. Those three. These are not in the game currently. Great politician bureaucrat can only be born in capital, appointed as governor of the other city if it isn't the capital, or as a diplomat to capital of other civ. The governor increases production, food, and gold of the city. I'm not sure what this sentence is saying in the second half. I think he's suggesting that angry cities can declare independence. Happiness is global, so does he mean if you send that as a diplomat to another civ that has angry citizens, it'll declare independence? I'm not sure what he's going for there. And also, a great politician bureaucrat can be used as a diplomat. Again, I'm not 100% sure the whole diplomat function in the context of this, but there's something that can basically make your city production better. Great sportist can be used for international games, which very much increased the production for that UN
like that
thing.
One thing.
Yeah, you can get a lot of production towards the international games. They can be born only in the city with Circus Maximus. That's interesting. And they have great sportist points with the Circus Maximus, Coliseum, and Stadium. They also can be used for culture and tourism, so another source of that, I suppose. And the Great Curator can be born only in the city with Hermitage, can be used for World's Fair. Again, you can massively increase production for World's Fair, and it also can be used for culture and tourism. So... that's that. I feel like there's some overlap with the current great people to
a lot
here, you know. We have artists, we have engineers, we have merchants, recovering hammers, food, and hammers, gold, and culture pretty well. I guess you could have a food great person, but seems kind of cyclical. Like, you know, you're trying to farm great people using food, running specialists, and then you get food again.
And more.
Yeah.
And it kind of seems like Great Sportist and Great Curator are intended for mid to late game, because as described, what are they going to be doing before that?
Yeah, I guess if you wanted to speed them up, like you could put them on a separate generator from the other great people types and just have people willing to use their food to farm that out. But it makes the trade-off between trying to get these international games or World's Fair versus investing in other things a little less interesting, because you could just farm the great person with a little bit of extra food.
And the great politician and bureaucrat kind of sounds a bit like a palace. Depending on the values you're talking about, increasing food production and gold in the city, that part, okay. So they can serve as a palace in subsequent cities or something?
Yeah, it sounds like
double tradition legend. Cities. Yeah. Or have, like, give a happiness bonus of some kind, I guess. That would be somewhat unique for a great person. You're increasing the production of a city and applying some sort of modifier of its happiness. I could make a legitimately useful great person, potentially.
Wow. Great politician or bureaucrat, increasing happiness? Oh, yeah, this is gameplay, not realism, so that works.
Yeah.
Oh. No, he increases happiness because you get to have all the arguing over the politics.
Yeah, basically you're sending that guy there, and he's going to subvert the media, so it only reports the things that you want population to hear, thus increasing happiness.
Completely. The whole diplomat side of things, that kind of direct overlap with the whole spies, so not really a thing there. It does sound like somebody's played Endless Legend and wants governors of cities that will increase stuff, which is kind of not part of the whole Civ thing. As for the can declare independence, I have a feeling that he meant something along the line of if you put a governor in not your capital of your own empire, and that city somehow gets angry, even though it's got global happiness, then they might declare independence or something, which seems to be adding a negative to something that probably shouldn't. I don't know. And the other
it already seems a little on the weak side compared to, like, a couple more great scientists. I don't know why you would need to have the risk of losing your city on top of it. But I rejected that notion and replaced it with one I liked more, which is taking enemy cities if they're unhappy. That would be
except
a legitimately useful aspect to a great person.
You could only put it into the other Civ's capital, and you could never just flip enemy capital.
Well, okay, but we're talking about a suggestion here. We can theoretically do whatever we want with something that's not in the game yet, so.
True.
I mean, yeah, in the context of Civ 5, like Bad was saying, the talk about the diplomat, kind of sounds like espionage, how spies can be used as diplomats in capitals of other civs. Getting them to declare independence if they're angry, you're going to contribute to that anger, or are you just going to be able to capitalize? Because it's the capital. Capitalize on it because it's already there, in which case it also makes me think of espionage.
Capital's been cooed. Oh, wait, that's another game.
Yep.
Is this how we're going to do the old-fashioned Civil War split?
See, I still think that'd be fun. Build up huge empire, and then you screw up managing it, and it splits and breaks down.
Yeah, in that respect, as long as it's not quote-unquote completely random. In other words, you've got a really large empire. You should have paid attention to this warning sign and that warning sign and that warning sign. Understand this mechanic and that mechanic. So it's not just, you random event. Hey, you've got a large empire. Guess what?
Yeah, no. Aww. That would be silly.
I'm assuming that's what you meant, but just putting that out there.
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously there would be obvious mechanics that are not RNG-based garbage.
Yeah, your unhappiness sits at a certain level for X number of turns. Maybe it starts a counter.
Yeah, or
like you have a golden age counter normally.
Yeah. If that goes negative, you're in trouble.
Oh, like a doomsday clock?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, like we have the golden age counter now. You could also have a Civil War counter if you sit there with the massive unhappiness for a long period of time. It triggers.
Yeah, or they could track where cities came from in the first place. So if you took over a bunch of city-states or some other nation, and they just track those so that if you go unhappy, those are the ones that are likely to flip out from the empire first. When it breaks, it makes sense how it breaks, not just random.
It's randomly the second city I ever found that decides to break away from Empire. No.
No. Get back to city-state style.
I don't know. If you found a second city and all the other civs on the map just have one city, you're double their size, the city count. So.
Holy.
I think Mackie will support this regardless, so long as, and this is a callback to an old Polycast episode, so long as when the split happens, it goes ka-chunk, because that's the sound effect we had before. Then Mackie will support it. Fact.
No, he said facts.
Yeah, sorry, Mackie. You're cornered. Get up.
I don't like being in the corner.
Brings back bad memories, huh? Does for me, too. Don't worry, Mackie.
Yeah, what I'm anyways. Asking is how they are generated.
Well, talked about with great sportists here, and I'm assuming that he's a he. Wow.
Whatever.
Because he talks about, like, a great sportist city with Circus Maximus, Coliseum, and Stadium have...
Yeah.
Actually, it's funny. He's great deportist points. Whoa, great deportist.
Yeah, no. I'm pretty sure English is not this guy's first language, man.
Yeah.
Well, I have the theory that the bureaucrats get born, or you can generate them as soon as you generate writing, because red tape is directly linked to writing and bureaucrats. So.
True.
you know, that ties in a little bit to what Boris Gundiff says in reply in part, where he talks about administrators and saying that there should be technologies that improve the effects of administrators, such as writing, or any technology that improves communication between cities, wheel, navigation, railroad, and even goes on to talk about improving communication between individuals within your civilization, such as electricity, electronics, computers, and the internet. Well, I don't know if the internet improves communication. I mean, it's the internet. But
it depends on how you're considering it, because it improves your ability to, like, send communication. It improves quantity of communication.
That is true.
That's really the quality.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Hey, did you get my email?
Probably.
No, I don't read any emails anymore. Text me.
Doesn't mean you didn't get it.
And then, of course, the age-old find a way to get companies in with merchants, engineers, and scientists, of course. And doing alternate things with those great people managed to sneak its way into the thread. Otherwise,
Well, Be Supreme in the thread also said, I figured after researching a certain technology, great people should get another ability just in general. Like, he talks about great merchants, establishing companies, which work like religion. After researching industrialization, maybe great engineers can do the same, but with production. After researching scientific theory, great scientists can give lectures a limited amount of times to cities, permanently increasing city production.
Hey, we're going to bring back corporations from Civ 4.
Yeah, because we totally needed Sid Sushi all over again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was kind of fun to have, to be fair.
Yeah, alternate options for the great people would always be useful, as long as they were useful and balanced and blah, blah, blah. And, of course, for the great scientist one, you'd have to remove the bulbing of text to want
to... Oh, make it like a great profit. Once you start doing lectures, you can't bulb.
Well, you know, but the point is the bulb is probably still going to be stronger than doing any
things. Yeah, and also it has to make it, like, egregiously powerful, in which case, yeah.
Then you've just made it egregiously powerful. Oops.
Yeah.
And also, it has to work slightly different than academies. Because, you know, normally you would plant a great scientist to increase the science production in a city. So it'd have to...
Get one early,
yeah. Yeah, you'd probably have to be like, here's a plus 10% per lecture per period of time or something like that. And you'd have to do it so that it would make sense. But then you'd have to remove Baldwin. There's an idea about philosophers in the thread, which sort of seems like an idea, and it could be a way to actually link it to the idea of going for various decks to split things off. So let's say you start the game with philosophers only as your great people, and then you research writing, and that lets you produce philosophers, say. And then say you get to scientific theory, at which point you can start taking out scientists, or industrialization gives you engineers, et cetera, for great merchants and that. But then the philosophers initially could do small versions of each of what the other great people could do. And then once you split off specific great person, the philosopher is no longer able to do that little minor thing. So they're kind of like the generalist at first, where you can get little bits, and then as you go through the tech tree or whatever, you can generate great people of different types.
I could see that. So you're starting to specialize based in part on your technology choice, and when you do that, it's like, okay, for example, now you've unlocked writing, so maybe you can suddenly now get great writers, or maybe if it's not instantaneous, you start building X number of points, so X number of turns after that, for example, now you can do the great scientist, and then, as you said, then the great philosopher can no longer have the minor equivalent of a great scientist. So based on choice in the game, yeah, that could work too. I like that.
Kind of idea.
Nobody likes to support this in the creator.
Well, I don't know. The sportist and the curator, it's like one-shot things. Like international games and World's Fair, they're one-shot things. Once it's done, it's done. So
yeah, it's in-game, one-shot.
Later game.
The curator has even a bigger problem because the Hermitage, you get it later in the Renaissance in architecture, and printing press allows you to form the World Congress, so you could actually get the World's Fair even before you have the Hermitage, which is...
Then oopsies?
Yeah.
What do you do with afterwards?
Well, then one would hope that within their balance consideration, they would have it so that you could actually get the Hermitage before World's Fair.
Yeah.
Or just so you can take them around for culture and tourism, so you need a buffer or something.
Yeah, but at which point you already have three great artist-type people who do that already.
Yeah.
Who get points from Hermitage Museum and Opera House. Broadcast hours.
Yeah, I mean, you could say, oh, well, I'll have the great artist, then I'll focus on culture, and then the curator can focus on tourism. But then you've now made both the curator and the artist very era-specific, and what's the point? Just changing the name in that case.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could do that. It doesn't seem pointless, it just seems superfluous.
And more strange theming bonuses.
I am not going to try and pronounce this guy's username because I will completely mangle that.
He's W.R.
Yeah, we'll call him W.R. But he has started a thread over in Syphonetics. He had the realization. He had an epiphany. Syph 5 is terrible balance. Building social policies, game theories, and everybody complains about that more or less. But it's not supposed to be balanced by developers. It's so easy. I'm not so sure about that. And fun to mod it. Stop complaining about the developers not doing the job. Make your own balance. Okay, guys, this is not how it works. There is definitely a place for mods with games, but it's not our job to make the base game without mods balance.
Unless you want to get into some kind of really complicated remuneration based on game sales afterwards.
Super Mario Maker, go, go, go.
Super
Sniff Maker.
Let's advocate responsibility of the developers.
Dan chose this topic.
I did.
Did he fall for the troll? Like, he didn't realize that that was a complete and utter troll topic?
His purpose was to troll us.
Yeah.
And also, if you want to hear more about modding, listen to Monk.
Oh, that's why we did it. Anyways, I guess in the thread they actually did talk about stuff, but too much balance equals oatmeal from White Guy. Which is sort of true, but depends on your definition of balance. If you're just going for flat, everything's equal sort of stuff, then that's not really as fun, correct? But if you go for more of an equilibrium style, where there's various points where you can balance out things that have different ways of doing stuff, and you go for an equilibrium between different strategies and other such things, so that one's not horribly overpowered than the other, then you don't need oatmeal balance. Style.
Yeah, they try to keep things balanced. We still end up with some civs that are a little OP, a lot of OP, but also there's a lot of their strength is balanced throughout the game. Like maybe they're oatmeal in the first part of the game, but then later on they can be strong, or vice versa.
Yeah, exactly. To me, it's not about, you don't want a quality, because then it gets boring, and then it's okay, I guess I'm choosing the color palette that I want to play with, for example, when it comes to a civilization.
Right, yeah. Apparently.
Yep.
Although color palettes definitely do raise the civilization community ire regardless. I would rather that be more of an equity in the sense that, okay, so this civilization strength is at this particular point in time, you want to capitalize it. And if you have to wait for it in the game, then you want to be able to guard yourself, whatever that means. There shouldn't any be just one answer what guarding yourself means. So then you get into a position where you can actually capitalize on something. So for that period of time, it's air quotes overpowered, but it's not overpowered in the sense of, oh, well, I'm on the map with that person, so there's nothing I can do because they're already positioned to be able to do well and continue to do well. Yeah, there's the snowball effect, and we've talked about before that, yeah, okay, but being quote-unquote OP in the early part of the game is better than mid to later part of the game, but that actually goes a little bit more towards balance in the sense of, okay, I may be behind right now, it's one step back this era, but it can be two steps forward in the next era, so long as I do the quote-unquote right things, or a right things, perhaps a better way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. And then apparently the thread goes into, well, this person tried to mod the game in balance, and then all balance type mods get thrown out there. And then we can all have a laugh, because different people's ideas of quote-unquote balance is not necessarily balance.
That happens with all modded strategy games. Somebody makes a balance pack, and no, this balance pack, and somebody else makes one. This balance pack's better. No, this balance pack is better.
And since none of them are actually balancing, they're just changing the game to their style of play, not actually balancing the game.
Yeah, you can say, I mean, balance is very much open to interpretation, so that's their interpretation of the mod. If you try it, based on the description, how well they promote it, market, word of mouth, etc., and then if you don't like it, then go back to the air quotes standard, or, if you know, like quote-unquote normal that the developers have, or try another mod. That's the thing. That's the nice thing about mods. You can take what your interpretation of balance is, and where it disagrees with standard, then you can go ahead and make that change. And that's great. That does extend the life of the game. And sometimes, hey, this mod is so great, the developers then say, maybe we should have that as part of the quote-unquote normal game. There's definitely precedent for that for Civ, and not just Civ.
Oh, yeah, XCOM 2. They looked at Long War and said, some of that's great.
Yeah.
double X.
We're talking about Wonder Consolation Prize, so when you totally fail to get a Wonder. Bugs them that cash payout, it should be hammers toward an equivalent non-Wonder building. So fail to build a great library, you should get hammers towards the library. Fail to build a great lighthouse or the Hanging Gardens, hammers towards the lighthouse or a garden. Probably match almost every Wonder to a non-Wonderful equivalent. Not a direct one-to-one hammer conversion, but proportional. Half a great library, you've done half a regular library instead. Generally a good idea, and not too many people seem to be against the idea. Apparently one person likes the cash payout, though we all know that the cash payout is way too low in Civ 5.
Yes, if you experience Civilization 4, then...
And you know that yeah. The cash payout in Civ 5 is worse. I think it's a good idea. I mean, depending on what you want to do, a lot of Wonders do map to buildings, but some don't. The idea of just rolling in over the hammers into something else that previous games did could also work. We're all going to build a library, and you're going to pretty your library up more than mine. Well, guess what? I still prettied it up better than you. So now you still have a library or a bunch of gold, because apparently all the building material that you put into it got thrown away and sold after you failed to build it first. Does make sense to just go, here, have a building, because you failed. As long as you build it, throw enough hammers into it, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a return to the, oh, well, you didn't get that wonder, you were one turn off. Here, choose a different wonder instead that you were not constructing all this time.
Yeah, that's that.
So it avoids that. There's also a connection between, like I said, if you're constructing the Great Library, halfway to the Great Library, then get half a regular library. Because I think about constructing the Great Library, oh, I missed it. Now I have to go and build a library anyway. And you don't get any reward for the effort that you put into trying to construct the Great Library. I suppose you could say, well, you can make it a bit more indirect, because if whatever gold that you get, you could then use that gold towards purchasing the Civilization V context, purchasing that particular building. But I actually would rather this, because then it's just done. It's, okay, you didn't get the Great Library, but guess what? You get a notification, you're halfway done to the library. So long as each wonder got a non-wonderful equivalent, as long as there was that connection and as that it was proportional as described, I think this is better than the cash payout.
Oh, yeah.
Either because it's too much cash or it's too little cash, you just completely avoid that. It was about the hammers to begin with anyway, so make it about the hammers now, but not make it quote-unquote OP. Because if you just allow it to construct any other kind of wonder, then... there really wasn't an opportunity cost involved, specifically speaking. You still got a freaking wonder. But at the same time, it's not a nothing as well. It's not an all or nothing. It's a nice in-between. Let's do this.
Yeah, or MZ Prox throws in there, since not all of them have it. But, you know, maybe you get less. Or you get a smaller version of the wonder. So, for example, you know, you try and build Stonehenge, which doesn't really have a building-related setup. Everybody goes for Stonehenge. That has 5 faith per turn. Somebody finishes it. But others who are already working on it would get something called a Great Shrine, which would give, say, 3 or 4 faith per turn. Probably 3. I wouldn't give it even remotely close to the actual wonder, because then you'd be not caring about building the actual wonder. And it doesn't count as an actual wonder for any other bonus. It's just like, here's our smaller version of it. Our people still love it, but it's not as good as that one.
Towards what Buzzing is getting at in the chat, give all buildings a theme and allow production to be transferred with a percentage loss to any other building with a matching theme. Yes. It's certainly better than, you didn't get the Great Library. We're going to take those 200 hammers that you've put into that, and now we're going to give you a library. And, oh, by the way, all these other hammers, yeah, we're just going to toss them out like they didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could say, well, aren't you doing that anyway if you're just giving a proportional? Yeah, but sometimes it's not what you do, it's how you do it. And just kind of in your mind, it's like, okay, I put in 200 hammers towards the Great Library. The library was 50, just throwing some numbers out there. So then the other 150, where do they go? Oh, well, no, all those 200 hammers contributed a small portion towards you being able to get the quote-unquote regular library.
Yeah, but consider that for the Great Library, you're going to go way more gilded than you would a normal library. And maybe you buy the really, really expensive books instead of the cheap ones. So, yeah, you just convert hammer into construction cost. Or other such things, and the cool stuff always costs more for the same amount of stuff that you would get otherwise.
Imagine wants the gold encrusted paper in his books in his library. Well, then.
Totally. My Great Library. Or you could do a situation where it's like, okay, so the Great Library is 400 hammers, a normal library is 200. For every, say, 50 hammers or whatever above a normal library, you get a small bonus to that one library. So it's a nicer library. but not great. There's ways that it can be done that people won't be sad that they lost out on everything, unlike currently.
Well, maybe not as sad, at least.
Yeah.
We're just trying to mitigate the what the bleep factor.
Maximum salt.
Because it does remind me where I rushed a wonder in a game with a great engineer, no less, and then the AI got it, and then I got nothing for it except heartache and headache.
Yeah, in that case, that's when you really want some other form of compensation.
Dipshit.
You bring it back to classic.
Yes.
I want restitution, dipshit.
Mr. WR, he wrote, should Civ 6 should be rated M for mature? Wouldn't you prefer a more serious approach to the game? Civ games manage to avoid very sensitive topics like slavery, prostitution, religious wars, etc. Instead, everything is dipped into sugar. Maybe Civ 6 should be rated M, but show the truth behind human history. Yeah? No. I don't think so, because I think if you add something like slavery to the game, you will just, like you wrote, you sugarcoat it again under a mechanic, and then it's basically gone. You don't see it anymore. You just hit, oh, I can rush production. Hit slavery, and that's it. You don't have, like, the appropriate graphics or whipping sounds and screams and stuff. Maybe then, yeah, but...
Yeah, but even then, like, yeah. It really stopped slavery over time, and it got used a lot. And so, do you have slave rebellions? Do you have situations in the game where, oops, now we got too many slaves, they're going to rebel against us? Which happened in more in the prehistory than not. And then there's that whole, but later on, people go, ooh, maybe we don't like slaves. And they're like, but we like slaves. And you can have a whole civil war over liking or not liking slaves.
We demand emancipation. Huge unhappiness. Oh, wait.
that pinch the right thing.
Abstraction's a big deal here.
Yeah.
Towards what's already been said, Supremacy King 2. I hardly think that moving a worker onto a tile with tobacco is going to correct young people into smoking, or clicking a slavery button on a city screen to rush build a wonder is going to make people run out and buy a slave. It's not Grand Theft Auto where you are graphically killing people.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, some things that did happen in human history are big enough and easy enough to work with to get it in the game. Like, he throws in religious wars, and, well, yeah, that can be in the game. That's pretty easy. Just throw in options on bonuses for attacking other people of the wrong religion.
Boris Genduff, who we said it earlier, any game that includes raising cities and using an Inquisitor unit to forcibly change an entire city's religion doesn't already have an M rating, then adding tobacco to the game isn't likely to change its rating for the worse. Yeah?
Yeah, there's that too. Yeah, there's one thing about calling tobacco a luxury. There's another thing about, you know, having all the characters on the screen smoking. Very different.
Yes.
Yes,
Midge.
One is acknowledging that it was historically important part of trade thing, and the other is trying to encourage modern consumption of it.
Yeah, it's questions of abstraction and also, I mean, context is so important, like glorification. You see that on the screen, and then depending upon the nature of the game, you are rewarded for doing that or penalized for not doing that, then that's a seriously different conversation than acknowledging the fact in an abstract way that this happened in human history and therefore it is being employed in the game in this way or can be employed in the game in this way.
I would argue you are heavily penalized for not employing slavery in Civ 4. Just saying. Unless your start was pristine.
It's less about slavery than the slavery mechanic.
That's true. It's kind of awkward when, like, you whip a wonder that kills people, but then you can, like, also whip military. I guess you're forcing them to fight. I don't know. Yeah, like, the abstraction breaks down when you can chop trees into spaceship parts. So I guess it's all good.
Yeah. There's a little problem with that.
So basically, building a great scientist is slavery again, because you're rushing.
Yeah.
You're making them do it.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
bad.
So you're clearly violating... standards
was a violation.
Yeah.
The buzzing says in the chat, you don't make your spaceships out of wood? I don't know.
Would you?
I'm hoping not.
You're an able chance of pun.
Ouch.
Thanks, buzzing.
Please don't hand Dan easy puns. Anyways, There's a whole weird thing about political correctness, and I don't think the Civ developers are being totally politically correct, just to try and get it below M, but you sort of have to do somewhat very specific things to get an M rating.
Yeah, and plus Civ is so distracted, like a turn advancing 20 years just cuts out most of the direct observations of horrifying acts.
Yeah.
In a game where you can conquer massive amounts of nations killing thousands of people in theory, and there's really not a whole lot else you're going to be doing at that level of abstraction that's going to make it materially worse.
Yeah, I mean, every time you take a city, half the population disappears. Where did they go?
You can carpet nuke somebody. You can nuke somebody so that they don't have any workable tiles.
Yeah.
Yeah, unlike some games where they have to think very specifically, how do we avoid getting an M rating? If that's what thinking, Civ is like, how do we get an M rating? You have to go out of your way to do that. And that, I'm not saying pick up the challenge there for Axis and 2K, but Civilization M-rated edition, where you can get close to other leaders.
But yes, unless the ESRB is going to come out and go, we've taken a look at your game and we've decided that it's more likely that the online interaction in your game will be a lot of swearing and other such things just due to how you've set up your mechanics. Yes, that is our new way to rate it. How pissed will your players be in online if somebody finishes Wonder?
Your mechanics are so asinine that, that'd be great.
Dear 2K, we are concerned that your game Civilization is going to promote young people to want to be warmongers and take over the world. So you need to do something about that, or M rating. Sincerely, ESRB. Well.
All right, so by Supremacy King 2. How important are tiles and hexes to a Civ game to be true to the Civ format? Put differently, if Civ 6 used a map with regions like Europa Universalis...
Oh, God, let me start banging my head against the wall.
How about a mechanic that works? But, so if Civ 6 used a map with regions that were functional, would that be considered heretical and un-Civ? Is that like un-Sim and Madden? The reason I ask is because I see many advantages to a regions-based map. It would fit the scale of Civ better. I'm not sure that's true, actually. When one turn equals 10 years or more, it makes more sense for units to move from a region to another region than to only move from one hex to another. I'll just keep going for now. And regions would allow settlers to colonize a nearby region for military units to conquer an adjacent region in a couple turns rather than units taking multiple turns, hundreds of years, just to move from a city to their target location. Yeah. This is basically...
Keep reading, because it's
All right. Regions would also allow more beautiful and more realistic maps, since that would no longer be a collection of geometrical axes. You're going to have more natural-looking maps that look like real Earth. You also have more natural-looking borders. Your empire is continuous territory instead of the hodgepodge of semi-connected hexes in Civ 5. Regions would also better... AI pathfinding, since it's easier to program the AI to make units from one region to the next rather than programming a specific hex to the hex path. You know, a hex is a region, just saying. I mean, it's a specific, very rigid, fine region, but it is a region. And when you're generating maps, it seems like X is win, because I don't know if you've looked at Random New World either before or after they changed it in Europa Universalis, but the regions generated by even the current Random New World are a little iffy, to say the least, and I don't see that generation looking particularly more realistic than something Civ 5 coughs up. They both look pretty lousy to me. But that's okay, because the emphasis needs to be on gameplay. The other thing is, if you're talking about scale, just unit movement speed versus number of hexes on the board is the real question there. You can make your regions bigger or smaller, too, and it'll serve the same function.
Yep, and distance. And if you want to talk regions, then you can also look at English Legend, which implemented a regional system. Most of their generation of regions is goofy. Like, you get this super little long thing that winds around another region and blocks off a lot of stuff, but even though you settled way down here, apparently, since that long tail of the region goes far away, you can block people from, crossing it far, far away from you. So there's that. It's not to say that somebody couldn't come up with an actual good region-building set of code scripts, because obviously the two that we're looking at, you and Endless Legend, both don't do it well enough. So there could be a better one. But also, pathing. Pathing would be the same problem.
Yeah, I don't see how changing the borders would alter the AI pathfinding significantly.
all it would do is make the distance to go smaller, but it would still be a pathfinding thing. Like, I need to get from this region to that region. Now you have to pathfind around stuff and through stuff and yada, yada, yada.
The only thing you could really do that would change things a lot, and I don't think the machine resources could handle it, is to just completely remove any region tile, hex, anything, and just, like, have entities on the map. But there'd just be so friggin' many.
Well, there's so many.
Previous
games that have tried that.
Well, like, StarCraft does it, but the scale is so much smaller. The only things you're interacting with are other units, buildings, and, you know, minerals, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but it's still tiled. So when you
in practice, you're not observing that.
No, when you go to put down a barracks, when you go to build it, it has an exact pattern. Those are how many wide, how many tall, and it has to go on the map. You can't just go, well, there's a cliffside there, so it'll be a pretty barracks because we put it on the cliffside, and you can rotate it. No, you can't rotate it. It has to go in an exact manner.
Okay, fine. But the units are not moving.
9 degrees.
The units are not moving based on these tiles at all.
No, they are. No, those aren't, obviously.
And that's what he's talking about when it comes to the movement type stuff here. So you could go that route, but I don't know that it would necessarily make the game better, and I doubt the AI would improve much. I've never seen a turn-based game attempt to follow the StarCraft model of unit. You'd have to, like, give them ranges per turn or something and just limit that. It's hard to picture, right?
But even thinking, like, Endless Legend, it has regions, but it still uses hexes for unit movement.
Yeah.
And, well, you have usual pathing problems. And I guess if you go to a region-based, and maybe he's just trying to think, like, totally abstract, where you have a region and not actual stuff in it. So no mountains, no rivers, no river crossing penalties, no weird stuff like that. And then you don't need to worry about the micro-passing. You just say, oh, they're in there somewhere. But it doesn't mean that you're going to get more natural-looking maps, though. Like,
no.
you could have a more natural-looking map of Civ 5, like in Civ 5, just by looking at some of the mods, because I'm pretty sure that we looked at a couple of mods like that a long time ago in Modcast.
You could also just have it generate a natural-looking map and then lay the hexes on top of it and then just have some awkward places where units would stand, but you still abstract that as a land region or a sea region or, you know, eligible or not eligible for movement. Like, you could do that.
Yeah.
I think the real big key to take away from this is just the unit movement scaling versus the scale of other things in the game. And I do agree that Civ 5 is a little off there.
Thinking of other ways of doing it, if you look at the Stardock way, where they went with Fallen Enchantress, instead of regions or hexes, they put spots on the map where there was ability to settle, which was sort of like regions because they shifted them out, but it basically, at that point, you lose the functional control of going, well, I want my city here. I can't. There's only specific spots on the map to be able to put a city. And then you could be silly and just throw up an outpost around it and protect it from somebody else putting a city there. And then all of a sudden your border is like 5,000 kilometers away because no one could put cities in the middle.
Yeah.
Naokao Kodum said what had already come up in part, which was, cities in Civ 5 look like regions anyway. And he says, your question is more about, should we modify the way armies move? And Supremacy Kim acknowledges in reply, yes, you are right. The army movement is the crux of what I'm getting at. And for pathing, etc. as well, Nao is like, keeping the tile system or not, so you play different roles than other civs. Considering army moves, I think it would be cool if we had armies instead of units. Well, we could still have units, but generals would unite them into armies. And immediately I'm thinking, yeah, we had that in Civilization Revolution where that was specific. And I know some people might say, oh, aren't armies kind of abstract in the artwork anyway, because when a unit gets damaged, then there might have been, you know, like three warriors, for example, but now there are only two, so therefore it already was an army. No, an actual purposeful in-game mechanic armies. I'm not saying to just copy what Civilization Revolution had, but I would like to see something like Civilization Revolution had for that, which would also help with pathing, not only for the human player, but also for the AI.
Yeah, and there's other random things in here, like Cricket 2 throws in the idea of armies don't actually leave places. They just have a range, like aircraft. So an army could have a range of certain space and they can go invade another place if it was close enough. Or that scout is super long range, so they can go running around the map without actually, quote unquote, running around the map and getting confused about what's going on. Because the scouts, if you leave them on automate, it does that anyways.
Some sort of attrition for a scout.
Yeah, Scout slowly dies because somebody forgot to feed them.
Your Scout has died in miasma. Oh, wait, no, that's another game.
Thanks for mad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind the concept of a range for armies, but not that way. Like, armies should be on the map, because if things have range, and they're like, I want to go settle that place over there, does that place have to have a range? Like, how close is it? And then I can maybe send a settler over there, except I'm not really sending a settler, I'm just clicking a button. And then the level of abstraction for the game becomes so high that you literally have nothing on the map except for cities.
No, and I was thinking range, I was very explicitly thinking, like, you still have a physical unit on the board. It would be tough to run a Civ game and still have it be Civ if you don't have any armies on the board.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, like, that might be a little too far. But the idea that there is a board, and you can only go out so far, like most space games, most space turn-based games, or even some of the RTS versions, you have a logistical, this is how far you can go in before you can have to turn back or whatever, because this is only how far we can bring food to you and stuff like that. And that could get bigger over time. But then that sort of concept in Civ would probably be okay, because then you would limit things like you can't just mass a bunch of settlers and whip them across the planet, picking off islands when you just started, or deciding to mass profit the other continent because that was fun. Like, people die on the way. That sort of concept where there's a functional limit to how far you can get away also means that you can't really dow somebody across the map until you can actually reach them, which would be a bit more historical. China didn't randomly declare war on the Ottomans for giggles.
Yeah, being able to reach your target was kind of an important part of the equation, yes.
And for no other reason than to help the AI with such things.
Hey, dummy, stop it.
So, two things. First off, you do not want the abstraction to be so great that you are bored. Bored with the game. But Europa Universalis is not the only other title Supremacy King 2 mentions in the thread. Nope, later on. Another possibility is that you could have both regions and hexes like Endless Legend does it. Units would still move from hex to hex, but the map would designate a group of hexes as a region. When you settle a city inside a region, the entire region would become yours. The borders would shift to include the whole region. This would really help solve the border problem that Civ 5 has. Regions would also be used to determine what special resources the city has access to. Regions would serve as a nice way of showing a city's sphere of influence.
Yeah, I don't mind the regional way of doing it inside Endless Legend, because I've actually been playing that more lately. But they also have a crap ton of other mechanics related to that, very specifically related to how that interacts with other things that Civ doesn't have, or has completely different because they don't have regions. And even still, I don't exactly like how Endless Legend does regions either. There's some goofiness related to it. So, yeah, I'm not really sure about regions, per se. And, if you have regions, where's your city-states? Does a city-state take up an entire region?
Sounds like it would.
Yeah, that's the problem. How many city-states, I mean, if you think way back in Babylonian history time, there was a lot of city-states all really close to each other. That couldn't happen if you have regions. And then what about barbs? How would you have barbs?
Screw barbs.
Yeah. Oh, those barbarians! They've never done anything for history.
Well, disambiguating them from, like, nations is a little questionable in many cases.
Civ's version of barbs is more like the old-school tribal stuff back in the Roman era. But anyways, the concept of Civ has always been to try and find that middle ground between total abstraction and totally too detailed. And if it's not trying to hug the middle ground, then yeah, it's not Civ. Because what you're really saying is that, can you make a completely different game but still call it Civ? And I think the generalized answer has to be no, because there are other games out there.
Endless Legend, there won't be.
Yeah, but Endless Legend has regions and units and stuff. They don't call it Civ. It's Endless Legend. And even if they went fully historical with it, it still wouldn't be Civ. Because in history, there was no such things as, oh, I settled in the top part of Iberia. Now I own it all. It's all mine. Ha ha. No, that never happened. So if that never happened in history, why should it happen in a history-flavored game?
So perhaps moving from what is Civ to what Civ is. It's not the first time we've discussed this on the show, but it has been some time, and I believe the last time we did this, it was before Civilization V, and there are a number of references in this resource to Civilization V from the Games as Literature YouTube channel, which is described as an endeavor that hopes to advance the study of video games as an art form, both in culture at large and specifically in the academic world, with the byline, and by the byline, I mean the description of the video. The Civilization series is all about history, but can it actually teach you about it? Published on the 1st of February, just under 1,000 views as of this recording. The video runs just a little under 9 minutes in length. The author, the Games as Literature professor, quote-unquote, describes Civilization as having a complex relationship history, and it can seem like a really educational game.
It doesn't have a complex relationship with history. Even Sid says it doesn't.
It can seem like a really educational game until it doesn't, quote-unquote.
Why am I caring about this?
Generally speaking, educational games tend to be very direct in their approach. All games that are clearly gamifying the process of learning subjects covered in grade school and, less commonly, middle and high school. Very few educational games bear much resemblance to more typical games, and only so many of them are actually much fun at all, since it's hard to teach through gameplay without basically turning the gameplay into fancy-looking homework. Few games bridge this gap with much success, and they tend to be for younger children. Civilization is not that kind of game, but it's also far from the only game to have a lot of educational potential by simulating a subject.
And then the author of this video, who's also featured in the video, starts talking about tangential learning.
Process wherein learning is facilitated and inspired rather than being directly communicated. It's a general principle of human behavior that we learn better when we're engaged in what's going on, which means that inserting something we need to know into something we already care about has the potential to get us interested and inspire us to learn more on our own time. Civilization is something of a goldmine for tangential learning about history.
Okay, that I can agree with.
And he goes on to talk about the Civipedia.
Yeah, that the most important tool for learning this in the series is the Civipedia. I would not go that far. I mean, yes, you don't even have to leave the game to find out more about anything that interests you, but I'm not really certain that just consulting the Civipedia in and of itself is actually inspiring you to learn more on your own time. I mean, it's part and parcel with it, but the Civipedia isn't just about the historical aspect of the Civ. Someone could be looking up the Civipedia because it's, okay, so what's the game mechanic that's associated with this? What's the unique building again? What's the unique unit? Oh, yeah, right, and completely ignore anything that has to do with quote-unquote history.
Yeah, except, as has been constantly talked about many times, oh, hey, look, this Civ is in the game. What is that Civ? I've never heard of that before. I gotta go look that up.
That, yes. Now, that makes sense. That's the spurring interest to actually learn history as opposed to just learning about a quote-unquote a take on history.
Yeah. And since it's history adjacent, historical accuracy questionable in most cases, but, you know, Civ does pull things from history. Therefore, these things existed. Therefore, if you don't know what a hotcha is,
hotcha!
Or when exactly the Renaissance, or why things like that existed.
you can blame Imagine for that.
It actually took a little bit, but Mackie finally did sigh. Thank you.
You got something out of me and Mackie.
I was timing it. Granted, as it says, maybe the kids' version, like the simplest possible version of whatever that thing in history is, happens to be in Civ. It's not a Civilization teach you history game, because that would just be weird. But yeah, the Civpedia has plenty of historical commentary or related info on stuff in a game. They do throw that in there. It's not just for mechanics, but of course you would also have to assume that Civpedia is actually accurate, and sometimes it's not.
Yes, you can write something that sounds very official and factual and in fact is not.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, that's one interpretation, but we don't know, or we don't reasonably know, but you've construed it as fact, when in fact it is a theory, or even, quote-unquote, more generally just an opinion, even if it's an educated one.
Yeah.
Oh, if it's a fact, fact. I said fact on the internet.
Dang. Foiled by my own rules. Ah!
La 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 la.
And the video also talks about that the actual progression of a game of Civilization is not historically accurate, to say the absolute least. Well,
of course not.
Duh. Herp. But that's not my favorite quote.
Taken at face value, I think it's obvious that we can't really call that educational. It makes National Treasure look like a documentary in comparison.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's, I think you said that more for shock value than being factual, but
yep.
Still,
totally.
That was a good one. It was also nice to have that little bit of humor in there, like, that's tongue-in-cheek, I don't believe he thinks he's being serious, nor is he purporting to be serious, but it is a subject that is taken otherwise seriously throughout that, so that bit of humor, especially when you're not expecting it, is just kind of like, wait, what? Oh, and maybe that'll inspire you to look up, what is National Treasury? Oh, yeah, now I've learned something.
What is a person doing on the internet talking about history? I should go look that up.
Something that is not brought up in this at all, and it's about using Civilization in the classroom. As a teacher, I can tell you that it would not be something where I would say, here, play Civilization. You will learn history. Actually, before I even get to how could I use Civilization in the classroom pedagogically, it's, how can I do this financially? Because
that's a lot of copies of Civ.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, see, there is no educational version of Civ like there is for Minecraft, for example. And then there's also the technical requirements for the game that often computers in school labs, I'm really not going to be meeting the minimum system requirements anytime soon.
The larger takeaway from this is that video games absolutely can help us learn while entertaining us. And in fact, oftentimes, this medium is at its best while it's teaching us something through the worlds and the stories and the gameplay that we enjoy so much. So, here's to a series that's trying to do just that.
Yes, sometimes, if someone is learning, don't point out to them that they're learning necessarily. What it really reminded me of, I don't know if anyone on the panel played this, it was an early 1991 game. It was called Math Castle. And there's other Math Castle-like websites now that are a complete bastardization of it. See, that was what I would call edutainment. And he talks about those games that are more direct in their approach, which includes Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? Although I think Where in the World Carmen Sandiego is a little better than Math Castle, because Math Castle was very overt, which was solve math problems, prevent invaders from taking down your castle.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in something like Civilization, it's about the first, and hopefully the idea is that it is fun first and educational adjacent second, as opposed to some other games where the purpose of this is it's educational. And if you have some fun in it, well, that's great, because Civilization is not edutainment, nor should it be treated as such. It is, as we're saying, a means to an end. In other words, maybe you weren't interested in learning about history until you played the game. Maybe you're still not interested in learning about history because you've played the game. But it's one of those games where it can go beyond the simple act of playing the game. You get into the meta game where you, for instance, start holding grudges for you know, across many games for a particular civilization.
Shaka!
Or you read about what a civilization did historically and you decide that in-game you are going to crush them no matter what, or you want to play them no matter what. You want to vindicate them in-game for having been vanquished in the real world. That is a big reason why you would want to come back to Civilization again and again. Certainly for me it is. Reimagining history. It is not a historical simulator, other than you could minor niche in terms of some historical scenarios, but even then there's some abstraction within there. So, yes, ask the right questions is what we're getting at. Is Civ fun? Yes. Can Civ help you learn? Yes. Is Civ a history lesson? I surely hope not.
I think you'd learn about how to bribe other countries into fighting other countries.
Hey, chaka!
Well, there are some historical lessons in that. Just
well, yes, yeah. But not quite. No.
Dear 2K, we hear you're trying to get Civilization in schools. This is going to corrupt young people and wanting to take over the world. Signed, ESRB. Oh, man.
Oh, no. People want to take over the world after playing Civ.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
Thank you for listening to the 240th episode of Polycast. I'm Dan Q. Be wary of the quiet ones, so not me. Also joined by Makalua.
It's just going to go now before it gets worse, because it's going to get worse knowing Dan.
It'll only get worse until it gets better. The mean team.
Play with me, I assure you. It will be educational.
There are some things nobody wants to learn, imagine.
Polycast narrated, not PG because of what Phil just said.
Pretty much.
I'm talking about playing Civ. What are you guys talking about?
Sure you were.
It's now literally rated, quote-unquote, not PG, and by our first-time guest co-host, Mike W.
People don't buy games to learn XML programming.
No, they do not.
No, they buy it to learn Python. Just in closing here, Mike W., so how long have you been part of Turncast but actually had not been on this show? You're following in Grimbeck's footsteps, only not quite as long.
About 1.5 years.
Are you saying that Grimbeck has big feet?
No.
I think Grim is even longer a part of Turncast. Contract fulfilled.
Contract fulfilled! Get out.
Hey, so rude.
I didn't say you couldn't come back. You could just exit and then walk right back in.
No. Max. I fulfilled my part of the contract, yeah? I'm still in Turncast. Or I hope so.
Yeah, you can stay for now. All right, so we've mentioned Modcast on this episode. We've mentioned Turncast. And that is that. Bye, Internet.
See ya.
Oh, it's 12 noon. All right. I'd like to call Mackie.
No.
Great timing.
Anyway, oh, wait, no. This always... is a podcast after dark. My bad. Please continue.
It's after dark somewhere.
That's true. Yeah. Don't encourage it, Dan.
Yeah. I don't think that's quite as much fun as this 5 o'clock somewhere.
Anyway, yeah. Tiles and Hexes, Texas.
Not like the long words.
No, just T-E-X-E-X.
Yeah, not T-E-X. Civ 6, all of your tiles are going to be shaped like Texas.
Hey, Phil.
Hey, Phil.
Phil. Matt, do you want to point it out?
I don't know.
Wrong thing. Like,
it is one of your
Oh, yeah, no, that's my topic later.
That's later.
Phil wants to jump to the middle of the show.
Phil's in a hurry. Oop.
Anyways, I think we beat that one to death.
Yeah.
Well, that's a rather violent summary, but... Speaking of reinterpretation...
Okay.
Oh, jeez.
Wait.
Yeah, Matt, that was for you.
Yeah, I figured, but, you know, since
he dodged.
Anyways, no. No shoes?
No what? What, you don't like the suggestions?
No, it's just the name.
Dan has picked all the topics this week. We have unpronounceable names for the rest of us.
It's not that unpronounceable, but I just choose the wrong way of pronouncing.
Yeah, well...
You are devalued. Oh.
Speaking about being devalued...
Ha-ha!
That, in theory, should have been a transition to Mike.
Oh. Yeah, sorry.
It still can be in editing. Don't worry about it.
Hello? That me? Yeah, okay. Can you hear me? What? Okay. Are we done spanking that one?
What?
I wasn't certain we'd started, but, you know.
Well, you know, Polycast might need an M rating. Come on.
Speaking of M rating, we're going back to Texas.
What?
Right.
What?
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 Texas, Mackie, Texas.
Oh.
Kyle's in Texas.
Oh.
Those. Okay.
Self-reference from half hour ago for the win.
I thought you were going to be like, Mackie puts the M in mature or something.
What?
No.
Whoa.
Hey.
I like to be more subtle, Dan. I didn't claim that I like to be subtle, just more subtle than that.
And which version of mature were you talking about?
The kind that is I am before it.
Record date February 6th, 2016. Is Civilization Education with Flips courtesy Games as Literature? Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips copyright Take Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.